Enjoying it?
For real.
Yeah, don't be shy. Just come. You can come even a bit closer if you wish. I think she wants you. So this is, I'm really excited about this session. This is an amazing opportunity to have, obviously, a Q&A and a conversation with Tim. Tim Hughes, I don't really think he's the kind of guy that needs an introduction, but just out of interest, just so that I can possibly embarrass him, but who hasn't heard of Tim here? Just so that I don't... Okay, great, bro. So I don't need to do an intro or anything like that. Tim is someone that we're really honoured to have at the event this year. Obviously, you know, on the forefront of worship for the last 15-plus years. And we are just really excited to have him with us. He's going to be doing the main session tonight in the evening, but this is just an opportunity to ask him a few questions on his journey and just to get his heart. So I would just encourage you guys to, make notes. I can see many of you making notes. Be like a sponge and just hopefully it'll be really relaxed and chilled. So, are you guys ready? So, Tim.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I think it would be great just to start with the generic question. What does worship mean to you?
Yeah, worship is one of those subjects, isn't it? That to try and find a kind of simple answer response is really difficult because it's this massive thing. I mean, the thing I think about when it comes to worship is basically it's our wholehearted response to God's initiating love. Romans 12 verse 1, it says that in view of God's mercy, so as we look and we see God's mercy, his love, his kindness demonstrated through the life of Jesus and the death of Jesus, in view of that, offer up your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing. And it's the wholehearted offering up of life. So I think sometimes we've got confused or limited worship to just about singing songs or what happens at church or when we pray or when we read our Bibles. But actually worship happens when we see things done amazingly well, you know, beautiful field, beautiful countryside, when we love well, when we enjoy the good things God gives us. This is all part of what it means to respond to God's initiating love.
Yeah. That's great. I think I was particularly, when I was preparing the questions, I was really interested, obviously, forefront of worship stuff. And there's been a recent transition for you personally as you've gone up to Birmingham. Some people may know here, some people may not, but just wondered if you just share that and also just the reason behind why and some of the process that
took. Yeah, my family and I, we've been in London for 10 years, part of an amazing church called HTB. I see a few people here from there. And I've been the worship pastor. And as part of that, we started a thing called Worship Central with a vision to train and equip worship leaders and a whole bunch of activity around the world with that. And I've loved it. And being a part of HTB and being in London has been just such a happy time for our family. We've had 4 kids while we've been there, and you know, it's just been amazing. But I guess over the last few years, more and more have felt this kind of calling, I guess, to step out into planting a church. And so I began training. I'm actually now a vicar, a vicar. I've been ordained. I can wear a dress and a dog collar when I want. So I'm in this kind of unusual position or surprising position of getting ordained. And we thought we'd be staying in London, maybe planting a church in London. And then this opportunity came to plant in Birmingham. And I actually grew up in Birmingham, so I loved it. And I've always had a passion for it. But I didn't kind of expect to be going back. But Bishop David, the Bishop of Birmingham, spoke to Nikki Gumbel and said, look, we'd love to explore doing a plant right in the city centre with a particular vision to resource the city, but also to try and reach young people. And so Nikki said, why don't talk to Tim and Rach? So we began a conversation exploring moving back to Birmingham. And it's a funny thing, isn't it, when you're trying to explore calling and what God's saying and how he's leading you, because it can feel so confusing and sometimes these decisions feel massive. You know, where should we locate ourselves? Where should we live? All of these things. And our, I guess, prayer was, God, we're going to keep pushing through the doors. We're going to keep walking. And if the doors keep opening, we'll take it as your guidance and leadership. If they shut, we'll take it as a sign that it's not right to go. So that was kind of Rachel and my prayer. And as we began to walk around the streets of Birmingham, we just got so excited with the city and with the potential. You know, Birmingham is the youngest, demographically the youngest city in the whole of Europe. And the possibilities there and the needs there are vast, and it's crying out, and I believe ready for a significant move of God. And so we kind of felt excited by that. And then there's a big conversation about if we're going to plant a church, where? And we couldn't find a building, and took quite a while exploring that. And then someone in one of the bishop's kind of key guys found this amazing building right in the city centre. And there's this road, which you might know if you've been to Birmingham, which is all the nightclubs, kebab shops. There's lots of dodgy stuff going on that road as well. And it's called Broad Street. And on a Friday and a Saturday night, there are tens of thousands of young people just doing crazy things. And this church, this building right in the midst of that, just off a road called Gas Street, was free and available, been derelict for 15 years. And actually this building had been used in the past as a place to generate gas, which would be used to light up the street lamps throughout the streets in Birmingham. And so straight away you've got this amazing metaphor, this amazing picture of a building that brings physical light, and began to think, well, what could happen if that building could become a place where God would shine an everlasting light to really impact a city in one of the most, I guess, dark and sordid places in Birmingham. And so we kind of thought, you couldn't write this stuff. You know, we couldn't have planned or made this up. And all along it's just felt like this kind of, God's been inviting us into something that he's already doing, and we're going to be partnering with a local church nearby called St. Luke's, which has been going for a while. It's full of these amazing people who've been praying to see God move for a while, and I'm going to be kind of overseeing that with a colleague, but I'm going to have a particular responsibility with my wife to plant into this building called Gas Street to really try and reach out. And we've taken a bunch of people from London. I mean, this again is like, for us, we can't believe it, because you know, I've grew up in Birmingham, so I know Birmingham is, you know, an exceptional city. Outside of Birmingham, people kind of have a slightly different opinion of what Birmingham is like. So I began to talk to some of our friends and say, we're moving to Birmingham, you know, do you want to come? Expecting no one to say yes. But we've got 30 amazing people coming up with us. We're connecting with amazing people in Birmingham, and just something's beginning to happen, and we don't know what it will look like. But if I may, there's a few things that we really want to base this church, this community around. One is the presence of God. It's amazing to come here and be a part of this. And actually, this is a key reason I felt called to step into church leadership. This isn't at the expense of leading worship. You know, I don't feel like I've grown up and grown out of playing guitar, and now I'm going to preach, you know, do something much more impressive. For me, that's not the case at all. I actually think this is an extension of what God's called me to lead worship and to encourage worship in churches all around the UK and beyond. And actually, I look at so many church leaders, they're the gatekeepers for worship. You know, the musicians, you can only go as far as you're given permission. And so for me and for my wife, Rachel, we really want to foster a community that can be all about space, time for God's presence. We can release young people in worship, creativity, to teach people and to train people and to grow people in having an expectation that God can move powerfully through his spirit, not just on a Sunday for an hour and a half, but in their schools, universities, places of work. So presence. Secondly, people, that we want to build a radical community who will love one another, but also will love those God entrusts to us, broken people who we can really serve and get alongside. Thirdly, we feel God's given us a passion for a place, Birmingham, that actually I think it's a tragedy, and it's so far removed from God's intention when a church is completely disconnected from a place, from a city, from a people. And actually the church is the hope of the world. And you know, the world isn't the world is crying out for answers and for hope, and the church, we have it. And so we want to be really serving the place in the city of Birmingham. And then fourthly, it's about purpose. There's a vision to engage young people, to see salvation, to see leaders being trained up, raised up, to serve in every sphere of influence. And so we're just kind of, we're going for it, we're praying for it, we're believing for great things. We feel way out of our depth. We feel like in many ways we're a bit clueless. We feel naive. But I think that's one of the beautiful things about stepping out as a child of God. We need to have a naivety. We need people who say, do you know what? This sounds crazy, but this is what I see. This is what I think could happen. And we're going to go for it. And even though people say, oh, we've heard that before. Oh, we tried that before. Oh, it didn't work. If we live our lives based on what people have experienced, we'll miss out on all that God has for us. And I want to be someone who bases my life on what I read in God's word, not on what I experience with my own two eyes. And so we need to be a people of faith. And look, very long answer, forgive me for rattling on. As part of all this, I've been recording an album and some songs, and the title has been called A Pocket Full of Faith. And it's a friend, Nick Herbert, who's also coming up with me, kind of had the phrase. And you know, when I look in my pocket, I don't know, you know, you pull out of your pocket, I pull out some scrumpled receipt, a plectrum, you know, maybe 20p if I'm lucky. Actually, often a little girl's hair hairband from my little girl, not from mine, hair. And you look at it and think, that's nothing. What can you achieve with that? I think sometimes we look at our lives and we feel like that. We look at our lives and our gifts and our strengths, and we look at our weaknesses and our vulnerabilities and all the stuff we struggle with, and we think, what is it? It's nothing. How could God do anything with this? But there's this amazing verse in Luke where Jesus says, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be it rooted and planted in the sea. And so it's like, God, this is all I have. It looks pathetic compared to you, God. It looks like nothing. And actually, even sometimes compared to other human beings, it looks like nothing. But I believe if I place it in your hands, you could do something incredible. And I think that's where we're at as a family, as a team. And I guess that's one of the things I want to encourage you. And I feel God really is stirring amongst kind of a generation to stop kind of, oh, I can't do it because of this, or I'm not good enough, I haven't got what it takes, I'm going to wait till I'm, you know, more redeemed, better, more grown up, more equipped, until I'm going to step out. And God is saying, no, now, there's an urgency. We've got to rise up, step out, say, I don't feel I've got much, but God, I'm going to place it in your hands, see what you can do.
That was brilliant. Some good nuggets in there. Oh, yeah, a little clap, there we go. There you go, mate.
Nice shorts. Very nice. Just stand up a sec. How well coordinated is your outfit? Do you have red flip-flops?
No.
Oh, mate, that would just take it to a whole other level. Red sunglasses. Red flip-flops next year.
I think one of the things that stuck out to me is, I think the very act of what you're doing is really pioneering something new. I mean, you've been obviously doing the worship stuff for so, so long, and then it really does take faith. It does almost more than a pocketful, really, to do what you've done. It's a very bold move in the limelight. And I guess knowing a bit of your journey, you're a really good authority speaking into a lot of worshippers. And out of interest, how many worship leaders do we have in the room? Guys that are obviously leading worship or on worship teams in their local church. I know, that's great, by the way. I know that it's a real, obviously, you know, you're now a church leader. It's a real part of your heart to see God's kingdom established through local church. And at David's Tent, we're massive advocates of that as well. But for those that see what we do at David's Tent, it's really privileged and it's an honor to be able to have so much space. But for those that are doing church on a Sunday morning, there often, and if not always, isn't enough time to... For some people, and maybe for a lot of the guys here, would really journey in worship and allow it to breathe and allow it to have life. And I know from your journey, you've definitely had both. And you're a really good authority in that. I think for some of the worship leaders here and others, and maybe church leaders here, it'd be great to kind of get some pearls of wisdom from you on how would you advise a local worship leader that's struggling with that tension. And honestly, it's a big tension, because I think for me, being a worship leader myself, I've definitely felt and it's nearly driven me insane at times, because my heart is just so for more of God. But I understand where they want to go with what they've got facilitated so much more. So it's kind of the space versus service. What would you say about that?
Yeah, I think it's a real tension, because as worship leaders and musicians, we're part of the story, and you know, I know we like to think we are the story, but we're part of it, and we're part of a community. We're often serving those in leadership over us, and I think just for me, that one of the key things to remember is this very strong biblical principle about honoring those that you're in leadership under. And for me, you know, I've worked under some amazing leaders, but naturally, you're not always going to see eye to eye. And I got a very big vision for worship and for space and presence of God. But you know, there's some, well, Nicky Gumbel at HDB, he's passionate about that, but he's also got a whole bunch of other things he's thinking about. You know, that's why I guess he's employed a worship leader, so that person can really take leadership and drive for that. But he's got lots of other things he's trying to focus on. And there's so many different, you know, you've got lots of, hopefully, in our churches, non-Christians coming. And so you don't want to sort of confuse them or freak them out. You know, you've got some people who find music and singing difficult. They're much more like teaching and word and really grappling with theology and thoughts. And you've got people trying to, you know, drop off kids. And, you know, all of these different distractions, which is why places like this are wonderful, where actually we can say, look, do you know what? We can have 3 hours of worship and there's not all these things that we have to fight with. So I think we've got to develop that thing of honoring. At the same time, I do think there's something in the church in the UK that we really need to press into. And I think there's been an amazing move over the last 10 years or so, where we've seen the quality of songs, the quality of musicianship, the quality of production just explode, and the new life of creativity, visuals, lighting. You know, all of this stuff is amazing. What a gift it is for us to try and express something of the richness and diversity of who God is. At the same time, I wonder if we've become so fascinated with that stuff, we've put our confidence in great musicianship, great production. You know, there's been almost a thinking of like, well, look, I've been to a Coldplay gig and that was incredible. Imagine, I've heard this a lot, imagine if church could be like a Coldplay gig, you know. But the truth is, not many churches have got that much money to create that week after week. And actually, we're not wanting to create an experience, we're wanting to facilitate an encounter. And they're very, very different. We can have a great experience and not meet with God. And you can have a great experience and not be changed. But you cannot encounter God and leave unchanged. And God moves through mysterious, wonderful ways. And so I think it was actually a thing my brother, who I know you serve with, who said to me, it feels like there's often an over fascination with production and an under fascination with the presence of God. And I think there's something as leaders that we need to create space. Even if you've only got 10, 15 minutes, you can still create space. You know, and I'm a believer that, you know, God doesn't show up more powerfully after 3 hours of worship. God can sometimes turn up within 3 minutes and do something incredibly powerful. And so I think we, though, need as leaders to be sensitive to where people are at, to try and lead them, make it as easy as possible for people to join in, but also to be bold and courageous in sometimes trying to follow what God's Spirit is doing, creating space. For me, it's the big thing of eyes to see what God is doing, and then an obedience to step out. And that doesn't happen without us seeking to follow God in all every part of our lives. You know, I think sometimes we think, you know, when we step up to the microphone, if we start doing a few little, you know, shalabalas and, you know, come, you know, we'll start saying all this stuff, then suddenly the Spirit's going to come. You know, you get the big pad sound on the keyboards, and then, you know, waving the arm, whatever. You know, suddenly that means the Spirit's come, because we're singing lines that aren't on a song. And I think actually, God's Spirit moves as He chooses. And we need to be looking to see what that is. And sometimes, I wonder if sometimes our times of worship might look like standing there for 20 minutes in utter silence. You know, great. Thanks, guys. See you next week. Or it could be just sometimes the most powerfully spirit-led times of worship, but just singing three songs as they're written, one after the other. But the point is, it's trying to see what God is doing. And the other thing I'd say on this is, I think sometimes I've seen worship leaders where it feels like they have to generate it all. Yeah. And it's like they have to lead every free, spontaneous moment. They have to lead all the singing up. They have to say, right, hands in the air now. Right, now we're going to sing out in tongues. Now we're going to do this. Now we're going to shout. Now we're going to jump. Now we're going to dance. And actually, I've learned the best way to sense what God's Spirit is doing is by seeing and watching and listening to what is happening in a congregation. And it's hard to explain, but there'll be times when I'm leading and I'm looking out and you just see something is completely changed in the way people are engaging. And it's like, okay, something's happening in this song and I need now to facilitate and encourage and release people to go with it. There have been other times where I get to the end of a song and it's like I hear this sound of murmuring. And it's like, I can feel it. There's a song that's about to be released. And rather than saying, because we think we have to say, now let's all sing your own song, sing in tongues, sing, you know, which can be a bit forcing on people. It's a difference. It's like you hear something. It's like, just encourage you. I can hear a song beginning to rise up. Just go for it. Go for it. Some of you are more confident. Lead the way. Others join in. Step out. Take a risk. You're nurturing. You're pastoring. You're encouraging. You're teaching as well. People how to step out. And you know, there have been other times where I remember leading worship at a meeting at church, and we were in the round on a stage very much like this, so it's quite small, and got to what I guess would normally feel like the end of the worship, and I just said, look, I think there might be someone with a song here, and I'd never done this before, but I think if you've got the song, why don't you come up to the stage and sing it out. You know, you kind of then, after you've said those things, you think, you idiot, you know, what are you thinking? But this guy came up, you know, kind of heavy metal fan, long wavy hair, those sort of chains all around, you know. I was like, okay, this could be interesting. And this is a service predominantly for younger people. He gets up to the stage and he begins singing this song. It was awful. Out of tune, the lyrics made no sense whatsoever. But you know, it's one of the most gutsy, courageous things I've ever seen, because he was like just worshiping God. And what happened is, in this service, which is usually kind of uber cool, everyone's a bit too cool for school, it broke something. And the next guy came up and he began to sing another song, and it was just like, it was amazing. And what began to flow out of that was incredible. And there's a couple of things. One is we created space, we took a risk, but also hopefully it was fathered and pastored. But also, and I think this is what we need more of, we need a few more people who are willing to look foolish.
Yeah, that's
especially in our generation, especially with young 20s and 30s. It does my head in. We're on a Saturday night, if they're out at a party, they're dancing like crazy, going mad. And then at church, it's like arms in pockets, looking like it's the most miserable place they could ever be. And I think for some of us, and I've spotted a few of you in there and you're leading the way, well done. We've got to be a bit more foolish, a bit more bold, a bit more free and exuberant. Not insensitive, not doing it for the sake of it, but actually when we're abandoned and when we're completely free, it releases something and it gives others permission to let go a bit. And so I think, again, if we want to step out in space and presence, not only do we need to create opportunities, we also need to identify lightning rods who will also lead the way. One other thing I'd say on this, because it sounds so easy, doesn't it, sitting here? Sounds so easy. But, you know, I've led worship for 20 years in different churches, and I know the realities of, like, you see something, you've got a vision, you feel so close, and yet it just feels like it's being squeezed or missed. But I think one of the other things we need to do is we talk about a radical fringe, below what you have actually. And this is like a group at the fringes of church where you can really step into experimenting, freeing people up. And so at HTB, Pete Gregg, who leads Amazing Prayer Movement, and I, we'd have lots of conversations around all of these things, and like, oh, I'd love to see people step more into freedom and worship, the prophetic. And so we started a thing called Kingdom Come. And they're just midweek evenings of worship where it's 2 hours, there's going to be no talk, no agenda. You know, we church services, you know, you have a minute by minute agenda. None of that. It's just like, we're going to pray, we're going to worship, and let's see what happens. And every night we'd end up somewhere we were never expected or planned. And what it does is it begins to give people space to grow in worship, which then begins to impact a Sunday morning, a Sunday evening. You know, people have tasted something and they come to Sunday ready to go for it. So maybe for some of you here, you just need to get a group of people around your house and just worship like crazy and see what God does.
Yeah, so good. That's awesome. That is really, really awesome. Just picking up on the father thing that you mentioned, you just dropped it in there. I think I had coffee with you and definitely gave you quite a bold word on the first time that I met you, but I just really felt like you just have an authority in worship, but really are, have, you know, you're a father of worship, you're a father yourself, and you're leading a church, but you know, your whole heart behind Worship Central and just releasing young people and David's demographic mainly. We are a family event, so it's, you know, it is a real family to the old, to the young. But its main demographic is young people. You know, you must have learned some things along the way. You must have made a ton of mistakes. And just, you know, probably in quite a bit of limelight as well at times, you know, what would be some of the things, or just some of the processes, or maybe the things that you've learned for yourself that you would say to like a young leader, how, you know, if you were, say, one-on-one with them and you're a father in them, worship leaders that aspire maybe to do something like yourself or to worship in a different way and they're kind of hitting against the grain somewhat?
I think the most important things, one is, I think you've got to be rooted in community, you know, and I think for some, particularly if you're very creative and prophetic, I know a lot of people in that group and a lot of people here, you've probably felt quite hurt by church or frustrated or misunderstood. And the easy thing to do is then to sort of hold back and, you know, well, I don't really go to church, but, you know, I listen to podcasts here and there and I worship in my room. And I think that's a really unhealthy place to be, if I can be totally honest, because I think God's vision is the church. And the church need people like you who are passionate, who are hungry for God, who hear God, who are creative. And it's very easy to pull back, and I get that. And I'm so sorry for when the church has upset and offended. But I think I could just see a work of the enemy would be to draw people further and further away from community and church. And I think actually we've got to plunge right in, because there's an accountability, there's relationships, and so often God, he doesn't actually work so much through individuals, he works through a people. You know, God called himself a people, the people of Israel, and so I think there's something really wonderful and healthy that comes out of that community. So I for me, looking back, there've been sacrifices with that. If I'm honest, if I think about some of the music things and some of the opportunities that have come, perhaps particularly in America, where it's like, just go to America, travel 6-7 months of the year, you could probably make a ton more money, sell loads more albums, more well known. You know, that, and that's the kind of pressure that people are saying, that's do this. And but actually, for me, and this is what I feel, my calling, I've known God's called me to serve his church. Not that traveling and leading isn't serving the church, but actually to serve his church, to be a part of his church. So for me, I can't be on the road 6 months of the year. And that sometimes can, you know, when you're on Instagram, oh, it'd be nice to be on that trip to Hawaii at the moment. But no, actually, following your calling and that community is really important. I think the other thing I'd say is really important is whatever it takes to renew that sense of wonder, to keep that childlike faith, that kind of openness, because it's so easy to get hard and it's so easy to get cynical and it's so easy, I've been thinking about this a lot, to get very professional in what we do. Right. And I think the professionalization of worship will kill the church, will absolutely kill the church. And so I think there's a danger that as you do it a little bit more, you think, oh, I know how to do this. I know all the tricks. I know how to make it work. I sort of show up, do my thing. But actually, how do we keep throwing ourselves in deep? And I remember a few years ago, actually, God really challenging me. And I felt like I got in a bit of a rut. And I remember thinking, when was the last time I failed massively in leading worship? And I couldn't think of a time where I'd like stepped out and it utterly bombed, you know, horror moment. I used to have that happen all the time. And I thought, gosh, I'm just not risking it. I'm just playing it safe, just singing the songs, just doing my thing. And God really challenged me. And I think actually when we're right at the edge, when we're really trying to listen to God and step out, we will make mistakes because we're not perfect. We get it wrong. But actually, for me, I want to be on that edge of, Lord, I think you're saying this and I'm going to go for it. And then you step out and it's like, okay, I heard that totally and utterly wrong. But that's okay. And I'm always reminded of something John Wimber said, that it's neat and tidy in the graveyard. It's alive and messy in the nursery. And so we need to see much more of that mess, much more of that life, and be willing to look like idiots as we get it wrong. And so I think looking back, my one big regret would be I didn't risk more. I look back and think, I wish I'd risked so much more. Kind of think, I'm 38 now, sort of taking the biggest risk I've ever taken. But I wish I'd done it more. So please don't play it safe. I just feel the times are too urgent for us just to play it safe. And just to think, you know, writing a few nice songs is going to change the world. We're kidding ourselves. We're kidding ourselves. So I think we've really got to put ourselves on the line. Yeah, amazing.
I think that definitely deserves a round of applause. Amazing. What would be, I don't know, maybe down a more personal track, but what would be, what's your hope? What, like, how do you view success? Like, within ministry, but also within, you know, God's plan of redemption. And when you think of the UK and this event, like, my heart for this event is to absolutely bless and change the culture of the church. Not just the worship scene, because it's a worship event, but it's to bless God's people in such an amazing way. Like, what would be your hope for the UK for the next 15, 20 years?
Well, I mean, can I say firstly that it's so inspiring to be here and to honour you, Danny. It's amazing. And what comes out of these events, and I've got so many friends who've been coming and have been profoundly impacted. So I think these events are so important. I think you mentioned the word success, which I think is really interesting, and I've been thinking a lot about this word success and the word blessing. And I think often we're thinking, you know, what does success look like? You know, so I'm thinking, starting this new church, what does success look like? And in my head, I've got an idea of what I think success looks like. But success and blessing sometimes look very different. I just had coffee 2 days ago with a guy who was leading a really large youth group in Birmingham, did an amazing job. You know, they saw 80 young people come to Christ through Alpha. And then he felt God call him to work in one of the hardest estates in Birmingham. And so he moved his whole family into this estate. And he was saying, I've been there 13 years. And he said, to be honest, it's been such hard work. I feel so discouraged. I haven't seen all the things happen that I hoped God would do. It just feels like it's been setback after setback. Now, we could look and say, well, look, he was so successful when he was leading that youth group, and now, oh, dear. But actually, I wonder if what he is working in and doing at the moment is profoundly blessed and profoundly significant. And who knows what the fruit will be. I also have a friend in America. They're part of this massive church in Colorado. It was like 30,000 strong. The senior pastor was on a hotline to George W. Bush. You know, the president would often call him in to pray. They'd have the press and TV cameras at their front door at the church all the time. You know, very, very significant. And they'd be thinking week after week, this is amazing, what success, and therefore what blessing, God's blessing us. Oh, thank you, God. And then tragically, the pastor had a major, major moral fall. And then a year later, a gunman went into the church and shot dead a couple of people. And it was just like horror, horror, horror. And the whole church has had to completely change and like deal with some of these painful, agonizing questions of moral failure and of man and, you know, suffering and hardship. And it's like they said, we could have been praying, God, where's all that success gone? But and they've realized actually what they've considered success wasn't necessarily blessing. Because as they look back, even when the church was amazing and looked so healthy, there was so much that was unhealthy. And I think for some of us, we really need to be willing for things to look like they're almost failing, that they're not kind of a success. Because I think if we're going to really reach the lost, again, if, you know, we think we're put on a few services and everyone's going to turn up, you know, again, I think we're in cuckoo land. And if we think there's not going to be moments where we're beaten up and we face agonizing pain and when we experience heart-wrenching loss, and I think for what I believe we're going to see happen, I think we're going to see amazing things happen. Move of God, it's going to be incredible, but I think it will come at a great cost. I feel that's what I've been really wrestling with in my heart, and just like, God, you know, I don't want that. I love a comfortable life. You know, I've just got back from 2 weeks in Corfu. You know, I'd happily spend all my life on a beach in Corfu, but I just know that God's calling us to obedience. And obedience can be ugly, it can be painful, it can be feeling misunderstood, and but it's Jesus' love language. A friend of mine said, you know, you think about those love languages, you know, acts of service, gifts, physical touch, you know, whatever the rest are. Words of affirmation, that's what my wife's are. She's always telling me, words of affirmation. But Jesus is his obedience, because he said, if you love me, you'll obey my commands. You'll obey my commands. And I think for some of us, it's going to be radical obedience, which will be uncomfortable and painful. But I think in that place, we'll experience blessing. It might not look like success, but it will be blessing. And it'll be a key, I believe, to really unlock something in terms of seeing a nation won back. So, and in terms of worship, I think it will look... I think we're seeing wonderful kind of creativity. I love seeing all these local churches, songs, music rising up. And I think we're always going to have these songs that connect everything together. But I think once again, we'll see much more of a prophetic sound, because it'll be local community saying, do you know, this is what God's doing in our community. You know, like KXC seeing Karen and Tom and the guys, seeing these songs that are coming out of this church that's trying to reach King's Cross and trying to see the renewal of all things and that wonderful heart that you guys have and what God is doing, and seeing these songs rise up that speak out of that, or Bright City in Brighton, this community that are just free and abandoned and excited to experiment and step out, and the joyfulness in that. And I just think we're going to see that more and more, which will reach much more to community. And it'll be much more heartfelt and much more relevant to who we're trying to really serve alongside. So I think we're in for a really exciting 10, 15 years. I can't wait to see what God's going to do.
Brill. Just if it's okay, just thought I would open it up to if you, obviously be nice to Tim. Don't say, can you write better songs or anything like that. Just keep it edifying. But I know for me at Q&As, I always love to get involved. So if anyone does have a question they want to field to Tim, do you want to just raise your hand and do it? If not, we're good to wrap up. I think we've got more than enough. Brilliant. So just for the sake of the tape, just if I got it right, so preparing hearts for worship leading, it can sometimes be challenging, is that right? Yep. How does one prepare for worship leading? Brill.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to think through. I mean, I think, again, I met this guy, John Wimber, pioneered the Vineyard movement, and so much of we're stepping into now is through so much of his vision. and he'd step up and lead worship and lead amazing ministry. And someone once said to him, "How do you prepare? How do you prepare?" He said, "Oh, Diet Coke." And I like that because I like Diet Coke. But I think I totally hear your question, and I think there's some real practical things. But I think there's also something of an effortlessness that just comes out of living a life of worship, that actually, you know, if you're seeking God and spending time with Him and studying His Word and praying, and you're around people and you're kind of trying to allow your lives as a community to be shaped by God, then it kind of naturally just overflows. And so hopefully you can always tell worshipers, because as soon as, you know, you say, "Isn't God good?" they're like, "Oh yeah, he's," you know, they're just like, you don't need to warm them up, it just pours out of them. And that's what we need to be like. That all said, there are practical things to think through. I'd be thinking through, you know, what's happening with the community on that Sunday, if it's a special Sunday, songs and themes that might reflect that, help people express that. I'd be thinking about set lists that have a good balance of content. You know, I think we need to constantly be singing about the cross, about Jesus Christ, confidence in who He is, the story of the cross, salvation. You know, there's a balance in our songs. I'd be thinking about tempos and style. I think if all our songs are just the same tempo, it gets very boring, you know, to bring that diversity. I'd be thinking about connecting in with the church leader. I'd be thinking about making sure I know the songs. Never good to start singing the songs when you don't know them yourself. I'd be thinking about how I rehearse with the band. And there's so many practical things. One, you allow me a little plug. We have a Worship Central course, which is 7 sessions, which looks at all the practical stuff around leading worship. And it's all online, worshipcentral.org, and it's free. You can download and you can do the course with your teams, and facilitates a discussion. But lots of practical and theological input, which hopefully might help address some of those really important questions.
Yeah, you may.
How do you encourage freedom? Yeah, how do you encourage freedom? Well, I also think with some of these things, we mustn't do it isolated from our church leaders. If we want to step into freedom space, it's really important there's a conversation with your senior church leader, because it's awkward if you're like, "Come on, everyone, let's go for it." And then your pastor comes up and he or she's from, "Shut it down. Like, what was that? Never again." You know, so we need to do it in collaboration. I think we need to teach. We need to talk about, you know, why would we dance? You know, maybe it's a biblical thing. Why do we raise our hands? It's a biblical thing. Why do we shout? Because it's a biblical expression of worship. Why do we sing a new song? Because it's a biblical expression of worship. Why do we try and play music skillfully? Because it's biblical. You know, I think we need to teach people what the Bible says on worship. But I also think, I think actually another little key in some of this is fun. I think, you know, again, sometimes church and worship can be so intense. And I think sometimes it could just be great to kind of cut loose. We had this amazing moment at HDB in the church we're part of, do this week called Focus. And the speaker got everyone to put their mobile phones, you know, that classic thing. We all had the lights on and we'd all been celebrating a bit. And it kind of felt like this big moment. And he looked at me and said, "Can you lead us in a song?" And I was like, "Oh no," you know. We've been going a while and I was all out of songs. And the only thing I could think of, and I started it really slowly, was, "This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine." And the whole place went crazy, you know, laughing, enjoying it, worshipping, celebrating. And it was like, it felt like just a fun, free moment. So I think humour and enjoyment is key.
Great. Let's have another question. Brill.
How, when you become a vicar, a bishop, how do you release and encourage worship leaders to go for it? I think you've got to have their back. And this is what I really appreciate about Nikki Gumbel. you know, he really released me and he said, you know, it's go for it. It's your time. Do what you think. And I also, we used to have, still do a little bit, but particularly when I first went to HGB, endless conversations around volume. I mean, how many of your churches, that's the, like the big, you know, volume. And I didn't realize this at the time, but Nikki, I found out by mistake, Nikki was getting email after email after email after email from people saying, it's too loud, what are you doing? Can't believe it, blah, 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 blah. But I chatted to Nikki and he was keen. We want to reach a younger generation. And this is not simply just, you know, old people hate loud music, young people. It can be mixed, but there can be a generalization. But we wanted to reach young people. So we were, and Nikki just got my back and he didn't let me see it. And he got back to everyone and said, you know, we're trusting Tim, we're going to go for it. Now, we would have conversations about being sensitive in that issue. It's not just about, you know, we're going to have a loud and screw you, you know. Because that's not very godly, you know. There's a balance to be, but actually, he created space for me, and so I think that's really important. Another pastor I used to work with, Mike Pilavarci, he allowed me to make huge mistakes. And again, I remember when I was younger, I used to think, you know, if I mess it up once, that's it, I'm out. And Mike said to me once, "This isn't about pass or fail." He said, "I'm committed to you for the long haul. And we're going to journey this together. And if you get it wrong, you're going to get right back up there and lead again." That, again, created space for me. You know, I was 18 years old, leading at this massive festival, Soul Survivor, way out of my depth, terrified. But Mark was like, "You're going to be doing this for years." And it takes a pressure off. So I think conversation, community, connection, and belief.
Brill. I think we've got time for one more question. Let's go. Sorry, guys. Let's go over here. And I've just wondered how you dealt with the fame of that moment where you felt, and how you dealt with how you got that.
This question, I guess, really about humility, isn't it? How you handle fame. I mean, I think there's a few things. I mean, I think one is community, having people around you, you know, family, you know, my wife. If, you know, I'll come back, you should have seen them a lot. Oh, you should have seen the way I led. Oh, and the way I flowed the songs. And she's like, yeah, whatever. You know, take the bins out and shut up. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, so I had this moment, like my brother Pete, he came to speak at Focus, which is, you know, 7,000 people there, and then he did the same talk at New Wine over 2 weeks, 20,000 people. And, you know, there are, you know, I'm thinking, you know, oh, I'm a vicar now, I'm grown up, you know, yeah, you know, leading worship, but also vicar, you know. And he does this talk, and as part of his talk, he puts up on this massive screen, and he holds up on the screen for like 90 seconds to 2 minutes, a picture of me when I was 20-year-old in briefs, sunburnt like you'd not believe, trying to clench my, you know, like, you know, and it wasn't a six pack, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't. And I'm like, what are you doing? And, you know, but it's people like that, that kind of, it earths you. And it reminds you that we're all just figuring this stuff out together. And I think, that stuff's really important. I think also, when you're a part of something that's not about you, where I get really worried for leaders is when everything is around that person. You know, so, oh, you know, yes, pastor, no pastor, or, you know, the worship leader quick into the green room and they've got all their kind of security guards. And because actually when you're a part of a church, there's so many things going on. And that's what I loved at HDB. You know, I was passionate about worship, but then you had this real vision for prayer and this amazing guy reaching out to those in prisons and these amazing couple, Nick and Silla Lee, doing all this stuff with marriage and families, and then a youth pastor trying to reach the youth, and then someone working with people struggling with addictions. And you think, gosh, do you know what? I'm just a part of something way bigger, you know, the kingdom of God. And so that kind of gives you a bit of perspective. But then the final thing I'd say is, I think when it comes to humility, and it's something we all struggle with, I struggle with pride. Of course I do. I'd be, you know, lying if I say it isn't a battle. And I realize it's something every day I need to seek God over. And humility, I used to think, was something that kind of would waft down, you know, it's like a gift that you just receive. And some people were just really humble, or others were just complete arrogant, you know, so-and-sos. But actually, it's a daily choice that God, before you, as I consider your vast, great, glorious self, who am I? But then also, as I look back throughout the tradition of the church and the history of the church and these amazing people, just a small part. And then when you start looking around at all the needs in the world around you and think, gosh, you know, all these people who, you know, they got no idea who I am, and, you know, I just want to get stuck in. And suddenly you start allowing God to cultivate humility. I think servant-heartedness is really key in this, that if you're above serving, you're going to be a very, very dangerous leader. You know, and actually, end with this. If Jesus himself said, Son of Man has come not to be served, but to serve. This is Jesus, you know, King of the universe, who created everything that we're a part of. He came to serve us. And if we think, oh, well, that was for Jesus, but, you know, I've come to be served and I'm going to enjoy it, then we're not basing our life on Jesus. And we're going to base our life based on man, and we're going to mess people up and mess ourselves up. So seek after humility with everything you have.
Brill. That's great. I think we should just, I'd love to just show our appreciation for Tim and just really thank him. Thanks, mate. Appreciate that. Would you just pray with us as we go? Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, Lord Jesus, thank you so much for who you are. We just love you. We're so amazed that you would make yourself known to us, that you would give us eternal life. Thank you that the same power that raised Jesus Christ from the grave lives in each and every one of us. He that is in us is greater than he that is in the world. Lord, I want to pray for every person here now. I pray for fresh revelation and a renewed confidence in you. A renewed confidence in you. And Lord, I pray for worship leaders and creatives, intercessors, prophetic people who maybe are feeling discouraged or confused by what they're seeing in their churches or in their areas of work and influence. Lord, I pray that you would encourage them over these 72 hours, and that you would give them a renewed sense, a trust of who you are and what you're doing that isn't based on their experience, but is based on your promises. So Lord, I want to speak life and blessing over everyone here. I pray that you do something wonderful in our hearts. The scriptures, Ephesians 3:20, I've been thinking about a lot, and I prayed over each and every one of us that we will see God do immeasurably more than you dare ask or imagine. Just for a moment, take hold of that. Lord, I want to see in my place of work, in my school, in my music, in my whatever it is, I want to see you do immeasurably more, immeasurably more. I'm not going to allow myself to settle for anything less than you doing immeasurably more. So Spirit of God, move in power. Amen.
Amen. Bless you guys. Thank you so much for being here. Tim's going to be doing tonight the main session, so make sure you're at that. And yeah, have a great rest of the day.